microphone is activated, so it doesn't record unless you're talking.
7 and 4.
Person. Okay, oh, here's the microphone right here. Got it. Hi. All right, now here we go. The light, red light's on. So you had $500 saved up.
And Mr. Moyer gave us $2,500, loaned us $2,500 at 4.5% interest. One thing he said to me, he said, John, don't ever get rid of this loan. As long as you have this loan, you can always come back for $2,500 at 4.5% interest.
Good idea.
He says, don't ever get rid of it. So I got the loan 3 times. I was down to $3 one time. last time the bank billing old leave give me a hassle because interest rates were paying like 18-22%.
Oh,
got the loan for 4.5%. And they wouldn't give it to me. We argued, I said for the contract. I said, oh, is it, I have to loan?
Right.
So I got $2,500. So finally they paid me off. I think I owed them $800,000. Forget about the loan, paid over there. So I got it. But anyway, we had this home here. That's how we got into cottage.
This house?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to use the word, at that time, nowadays people wouldn't do it. We struggled. My wife, we didn't have no washing machine. We didn't have no refrigerator. We had nothing. The only thing we had was a pump. We didn't have no bathroom, the outside outhouse. That's where we lived. My wife, we had cloth diapers.
Yeah.
She would use a scrubbing board. And she didn't mind. I didn't mind. Yeah. That was a way of life.
How many children did you have at that time?
Well, we had, I think, let's see, John was born when I was overseas. I guess I was prisoner of war. He was born in October 13. I didn't know what day he was born. I knew he was going to be born. When I come home, I finally found out, I had a son. He was 13 months old when I came home. I mean, those days, things were a little bit different. I mean, actually, if you would talk to people now, it was very sad that it happened. But that was part of life then.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we had Cookie, Frank. I was asking about John, it was true. My wife, she used,
Right.
They were all born in, then I had one in 52, I had a daughter in 52, which I brought into the world myself. I was a doctor.
Oh, my. Yep.
And I brought two of my children into this world. I was a doctor. Believe me, it's nothing being a doctor. The woman does all the work. I look at it this way, I think the women nowadays, I don't know, they're too much, I don't know what terminology, but too much doctor. I have to go see a doctor, I have to go talk to
my
doctor.
All right, yeah.
No, my wife, she went to see a doctor, but one of my boys, Frank, when he was born, she said to me that morning, John, I got these terrible gas pains. About half an hour later, we had a baby in the house. We didn't know what the heck to do with the baby. I went out, we got a dishcloth, and we didn't have my wife send me to the drugstore to get a formula and bottles and nipples. So, I mean, he was away 2.5 pounds when he was born. He was premature.
2.5 pounds?
19 inches long.
Oh my gosh. And did he survive? Is he an adult today?
Yeah, he's a big guy now.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. See, and then I guess about 2 hours later, a doctor came over. Oh, he says, you're doing fine. So I went on vacation for 4 weeks with Dr. Libby from New Hope.
Oh, I know Dr. Libby. Yep.
I didn't like him. You know why?
No.
Because he neglected his duties as a doctor. My wife had a needle in her wrist one time. It was an inch long. She kept saying, John, I got something in here. Went to the doctor. Right, he says, you're like the rest of the people. Moan, pain. Well, we were skating with Dr. Freeborn down here in Point Pleasant on in the canal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She fell. She come home screaming because her wrist was up. So I got a pair of tweezers. I looked at her, she was something. I pulled out a needle, inch and a half long. It was already, you know, it was just corroded. It was, and the body was eating it up.
I'm surprised you didn't have blood poisoning.
Well, I don't, it was a surprise. But anyway, she survived. But I was peed off at the doctor then because he was ignoring it. Instead of him looking at it, those days the doctors didn't take too much attention to anything as far as I was concerned. So I didn't have very much time for it. Then our daughter passed away. She was 15 months old and she was dying. Dr. Libby was a family doctor. So my wife called him. She says, today's Wednesday, today's my day off. He wouldn't come. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the truth. Mm-hmm. So our friend Freeborn down Point Pleasant, we called him. He'd come over. He was a good friend of ours. We used to go out on Saturday nights and have a good time together. He came over. He says, this little girl should have been in the hospital 24 hours ago. She's dying. She's, you know, don't have a chance. Well, anyway, the two insurance companies, one was Prudential and one was Farm Bureau. They were going to sue Dr. Leiden because he neglected his duty as a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to sue him. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, you know, these were things that were happening to us, you know. In the meantime, we got ourselves a heater in the house, you know, with the hot water. We put a bathroom in. I mean, everything we've done, we struggled. There was no credit cards. I don't think they had credit cards.
No.
Did they?
No, I don't think so.
No, and that was unheard of. Everything we got, we saved the money, you know, got it, and we saved the money we got. I had a fairly decent job. I used to knit nylon stock and women's hosiery. And I had women friends all over the place. John, could you get me a pair of nylon? The nylons were like $5-$6 a pair. I could pick them up to 99 cents. I had a lot of friends.
Was that in Philadelphia? Was that a hosiery company?
No, in Chalfont.
In Chalfont? Is it still in? No, it's not.
No. See, they sold out in 1950, and that's when Paramount bought the plant. But I made decent money. I probably made three times more money than the average guy did. The average, I remember, it was 1950, when the company started redesigning machines, you know, and I started working on them, so they kept me on the redesign machines. I was earning $15 an hour. 1950. And people didn't know. That's what we used to earn in the home.
Right.
$15 an hour. Average wages just was around $8, $9, $10.
Right.
Well, we done pretty good. No, here in Cottageville was let's put it this way. We didn't think we struggled. We thought this was part of life.
Yeah.
And we lived here, and we improved it, you know, put heat in the house, and water.
There were seven children all together?
We had seven children.
Seven children?
One passed away, six are still living.
One. And they're all, we know Jeannie Heath, and we think the world of her. And strong morals, strong work ethic. And Bobby, of course, is just a treasure.
She's a hard one.
Yes.
Yeah, see, I have all my children when they grew up, when they're children, my grandchildren were growing up, I could see my kids growing up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I could see the values that my kids have with their grandchildren.
I want you to tell me about your war experience, and I want you to tell me you were in the U.S. Air Force.
The United States Army Air Force.
That's right, it was called the Army Air Force. World War II.
Yes, I got drafted in the service. I got drafted in 1942. And it was 1942 when we got married. We got married in the Justice of Peace. I mean, I'll never forget that when my wife she sent for a dress. She wanted a nice brand new dress. I think it cost her $3. Spiegel's catalog.
Oh, right.
And then it was supposed to come in the mail, but it wasn't coming. We're getting married on Saturday. I think it came on Thursday. She was only 17 years of age. We got married, and I guess we was in 19, and I went into service. And I remember Pearl Harbor, it was horrible. People don't, you don't remember it.
I was only a little girl, and I remember everyone talking about it. And I was 4 years old, and I was in Groton, Connecticut, which is where the electric boat company is. And I said, what is Pearl Harbor? And they said, the Japanese have killed men, women, and children. Children, I said. Oh, my, this is serious. But I mean, I just, you know, and then movies
see,
and stuff.
It was a horrible thing.
Now, where were you when this happened? Where were you at Pearl Harbor? Were you here?
Or? I was here. I wasn't drafted.
Everybody got maps out.
I got drafted in 1942, November 20th.
Mm-hmm.
And I got discharged in 1940, I think it was 45, 3 years later, right up to the date, November the 20th. It was exactly 3 years that it went in and went out. I was over here stateside for about, I don't know, maybe 14, 15 months down in Texas, Paiute Air Base. And I went to basic training. First we went to basic training over at Camp Lee, Virginia, with that guy's general, Lee, you know, he had the regular trenches. We were there, and my wife, she went over there. She was a little mama's girl, and she was only younger.
Oh, yes.
We had an apartment, we had a room there, $7 a month. She said, I want to go home and see Mama.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget that. She was like a little baby. I could see her, you know, she was only seven, never been away from home, you know.
No.
She came up from the mountains up the coal region. Her family originated from the coal region.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, they say, they own coal mines up there, up to the, I don't know, like we went a couple times up there, you know. Went over a mountain, you know, like 25, 30 miles from one side. She said, we own everything. We own all the coal mines. See, they own the coal mm-hmm. soft coal.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, she was a wonderful, wonderful human being. When she passed away, I haven't found anybody even close to her. I often said if I find somebody half as good as she was, we get married, then it hadn't happened.
She died how long ago?
So where were
you? Your wife has passed away.
She passed away in 92, September the 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And, she had an aneurysm on her stomach. See, again, things could have been better, but they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Leiby, Dr. Leiby, he did not, it was up here in Clemson.
Well, it wasn't Leiby, but whatever, whoever.
Well, anyway, he didn't. She kept saying to her, she says, I have this terrible pain in my stomach. Oh, he says, Mrs. Redosin, he says, take some Maalox. Mm-hmm. 6 months later, she's going to found out she had an aneurysm. See, she had it growing.
That's right. The balloon. Mm-hmm. Dad had one, and it was operated on, and he was fine for another 10 years.
Was he?
Yeah. Now, I want you to find out about the war. Here you are. Down in Texas with your wife, and she wanted to go.
No, she was only in Virginia.
I see.
From Virginia. From Virginia, I went to University of Indiana.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I went to school there. The United States government sent me to school there.
Okay.
Studied mechanical engineering. See, I guess they go according to your intelligence, your IQ.
True, sure. Right.
And so from there, when I graduated, I went to United States Army Air Force.
Right.
And I was down Texas, Paiute, Texas, for I don't know how long, but it was quite a while. Before I was like 12, 13 months, they shipped me overseas.
And where did they ship you?
Australia. went from Australia, and shipped to Australia from Australia. We went in New Guinea, and from New Guinea, we went to Najib, and that was part of New Guinea. Then we went to Ai Island, which was part of Netherlands, East Indies,
mm-hmm.
And from Netherlands, East Indies, we went to the invasion of Leyte. That was the actual invasion.
Oh, yeah.
That was on sometime. It took 1 month to assemble a convoy. There was hundreds and thousands of ships. We sat out there in the water for almost 4 weeks, pushing
mm-hmm.
convoys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the United States Air, 5th Air Force. I was with General Whitehead.
Oh, General Whitehead.
Mm-hmm. He commanded the 5th Air Force. Anyway, we made the invasion on Leyte. We had, see, the way that went up was that all the planes, they had belly tanks, wing tanks, and there was like 2,500 up. When they made that assault on there, if they run out of gas, we didn't get a foothold on the beach, you know, we were gone. It was 4 hours later, we went in after the initial invasion. And I didn't know that at that time. My father-in-law was with me and my brother. My father-in-law, he got drafted, I'm going to tell you, he got drafted, I didn't even know, he got drafted. He was 39 years old, he had five children, one of the children. My wife, she was the only daughter. He got drafted. He was 39 years old. The United States government drafted him and put him in the Navy. He was a landing craft infantry. People don't believe that. It was horrible. I mean, when you look at it, it was really horrible compared to nowadays. We had 17 million men in uniform. 16 million of them was draftees. But anyway, I was over there after the initial invasion. I guess it must have been 2 weeks later. I found my brother-in-law. I see him one day. I'm just trying to get cleaned up a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, we had this norm, your helmet, you know, with the basin, you know. I see, look back, I said, geez, I know that guy. I said, see him walking, my brother-in-law walked pigeon toes. See, and that guy was walking pigeon toes. Didn't pay. Until they got within the 50 feet of Jesus, God is Joe. What the hell are you doing over here? And he smiled and laughed. I said, Joe, I says, my mother tells me and my wife tells me that you know, sending home a lot of money. See, both of my mother and his mother, they both came from Europe. They knew each other.
What country?
They came from Czechoslovakia.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they were talking to each other.
Right.
They didn't know any different. She says, my boy Joe's got, he's got big money. He's sending home $1,000. So I said, Joe, I said, you gambling? He says, no. He said, I'm not gambling. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, he said, well, John. He says, like this. He says, there's six of us together. And he says, he works. And the crew unload ships. He said,
right.
load of sugar comes in. He said, we unload. Three loads goes up to the mountain and three loads goes to the Jordans. He said, we got a moonshine, we got a still run. He said, we're making moonshine. We're selling it. No, I mean, it was something. And anyway, he says, he must have sent home, I would probably say, guessing now, $50,000.
In 1942, or 43, in the 40s.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That was in 40, I think it was in 44, because I remember while we were on Leyte there, Tokyo Road made a promise. It was hard on them. It was real hard, but I seen General MacArthur. They were showing him, you know, they had the stars and stripes, you know, what
yes.
you see.
Right.
Whatever it was. They showed news of him, you know.
Yeah.
General MacArthur walks in on the invasion. Baloney, it was 3 days later, he waddled in through the water there. Wasn't a great hero like everybody made him. But anyway, I guess you know that his wife was a Filipino.
Yes, I do know that.
And he has a Filipino son.
Yes, right.
And I'll tell you, he was a very good general, but most of the men didn't like him. Because he was this type of... And I say, a good general is like this. If he put two men in, he lost two men, he put in four. If he lost four, he put in, He doubled everything up. He kept pushing enough men till he won the battle. And well, we lost men over there. Like I say, where I was, we, out of every 10 men, we lost 9.
Oh,
God.
And
we had, we went from Leyte, we went the invasion of Mindanao. From Mindanao, we went to Luzon. From Luzon, we went to Okinawa. Now that was a, we made the invasion. We must have lost our men in between killing and wounded. We must have lost 250,000, 300,000. It was like 450,000 Japanese killed men. No, I mean, it was
now, Gwen, now, tell me, I want to make sure that this is working. If it's good, it is, everything is good. I want you to tell me about your capture and when you were a prisoner of war. Well, how did that happen?
Well, that happened. Tokyo rose for about 3 weeks. She kept saying she's going to wipe out the 5th Air Force. She's going to wipe out the 5th Air Force. In the meantime, you know, our, of course, we got smart people over there. Meantime, they, we had men dispatched all over. Trucks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for 3 weeks this went on. You know, they were, you know, just in case. Well, the third week, they took everything off the island. They didn't realize that December 7th was coming up, Royal Harbor, and they dropped like in between 400 or 500 plane loads of paratroopers on it. Just come down on us. Well, they didn't know who, they just came down where they thought the 5th Air Force was. They had a General Whitehead. They had us, but they, you see over there, you don't identify yourself. I mean, as far as rank. Japanese had us corralled up, had us boxed in. I guess we were prisoners, I guess, for about 3 weeks. We had like 3 divisions about a mile or 2 away from us.
Tell me how many men in a division. I don't, about?
I don't know.
Hundreds.
There's a thousand. So
right.
But anyway, they couldn't come in because they didn't know where the Japanese were. You know how they got us out of it?
No.
They picked the Japanese off one at a time. I remember they tried to land the plane. The Japanese controlled 2 airstrips. The one in the middle, we controlled it because our men were still on the ground, see?
Mm-hmm.
And when they came in, you know, they shot the plane right off, you know. Because it was no useless, you know. The Japanese should control 2 airstrips and whatever. See, it was kind of, the airstrips like, there's like these, what do you call it, like banana trees and stuff like that in between the strips.
Yeah.
So like a half a mile different. But I mean the Japanese, they were all over. We picked them off one by one.
Wow.
And people ask me, I says, I don't remember, I don't want to remember too much. I remember when they captured us. Somebody was saying they started flying over. So somebody, you know, men over there, they see a plane flying. They figure out what kind of a plane and whose it is. And one guy said, well, they're unusual. He said, the Navy planes. I heard one guy say, Navy, holy crap. This is, they're shooting down. They're Japanese. They're shooting down. No, I mean, it was horrible to see. You ever seen snowflakes coming down real heavy? That's the way they come down with you. All over. You didn't just got us and that was it. I don't remember too much about it.
Well, that's
remember.
A relief. That would give you a nightmare. So that.
Well, I do have nightmares. I have when I came home from the service. I still had, after my wife passed, I had 2 nightmares. That's why these dogs I got, I told them they got them made for life. I had a great big German Shepherd and that puppy there. And I had a nightmare. I was sitting watching TV, fell asleep. I'm waking up, and a little puppy sitting on my stomach. He's just the way he's whining, you know. And a big dog, I had a regular police dog, a canine dog. Regular police dog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, done police work.
Yeah.
Well, he was over there licking me, they were trying to bring me to. Every time I sneeze now, the puppy, he comes, Jeffrey comes running to me.
I had some.
And when my wife was alive, she knew when I start kicking myself around the bed, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She'd kick me and wake me up many times. What'd you kick me for? She said, John, she's ready to have one of your doozy nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
She had me picked off real good. You know why? Because if I had something special coming at work, you know, she'd come home, and, you know, I'd come home next day. She said, "Everything going on?" I said, "How'd you?" She said, "I could move the night before." She didn't sleep very good. You moved around the bed a lot. She said, "I knew there was something coming up there."
Right.
So, no, I mean, it was something that they had, I don't know how many men we lost in that, but the scene was like this. I'll tell you something, I was with General White, and he was well protected. When we went on the invasion, I'm going to say something, you know how many, he was guarded real well. 10 guards deep. So, in order, before they get to him, they have to kill 10 men. He was guarded. That's why sometimes I think the only reason I'm here is because of General Whitehead. I remember General Whitehead on the invasion. Our fighters start coming in landing. See, the job was we were supposed to lay steel matting down for our fighters. Right. Well, we never got a chance because they were coming in, no fuel. And they already had the drum, 55-gallon drums of fuel, aviation fluid drums. General Whitehead, there's a general, he's down there putting this here in the drum, he's pumping aviation. We used to laugh at him, this, wow, that's a general. But see, you don't identify yourself with it.
No.
We had, while this was going on, the ship that we were on, must have been minutes or later that one of these Kamisaki planes come down, dove in, and blew the thing all apart. I mean, like I say, I have a very good guarding angel. Every place I was just was there ahead or after it happened. Mm-hmm. So
now you came home and you have a son, another son?
Yeah, that's
Frank?
John.
John. That's right. John was born. But your poor wife didn't know where you were, did she?
No, I mean, that's another thing. The United States government that time, when they censored the mail, she said, "John, you could have." She said, "The letters I've seen was da, if, chuck. Everything was blacked out. Every letter I wrote, or every letter she wrote, they censored. They would take it." I should have let her. God, she couldn't understand. I try to tell her, "Hey, honey, it's like this. I'm sweating when I'm in an area. It's hot."
Yeah.
She'd give her no. They would censor that out. No, I mean like the Japanese during Pearl Harbor, Roosevelt, I think he was a very, very intelligent man. I think he was probably one of the richest men in the world. Yet he was, for the ordinary common working person, he was poor. I think the reason for that is because he had this polio. I never knew he had polio.
No, they said that the press would never photograph him if he was in his wheelchair.
I know.
And he would always, they would try to prop him up and to talk. So being
I'll tell you, when I was over in over at Clark Field, see, that's the thing, after we made the invasion in Manila, and I mean, they freed the prisoners of war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had this plane track. Towing airplanes, you know. They told me, "John, you're going to stay here. You got to wait till the tractor and trailer come," because they were going to Clark Field. You had to drive at high speed because they had snipers all over. See, when I noticed, I'm in Iraq, you know, I said, these guys are getting bumped off. I said, yeah, over there, what we used to send out scouts ahead. They scout. They have these airplanes say, "Yes, there's a Japanese nest here." They come down and get him, you know. We had scouts, and then we had these guys, they were patrols, you know. Mm-hmm. The scouts would go ahead, the patrols going behind. So when the convoy was going, it was pretty safe.
Right.
Over in Iraq, you know, I said, come on, they're running over to me like a bunch of idiots, you know, hey, you don't send convoy out there when a guy's trying to pick you off.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, we were out there and we got in, stuck in Manila. Well, this guy had to stay here. He said, "Stay here with the ambulance so John and you and him can sleep in the ambulance." Well, guess what? We're walking. I don't know anything about Manila. Manila is like New York City in the United States. Huge.
Mm-hmm.
We're walking down a street and we hear this American music playing. Oh, my God, it was so wonderful. We walk into this place. this place is full of people, you know, everybody's having, I looked at everybody's drinking booze. Here they had just freed the prisoners of war, you know, Americans, the Russians, even them, you know, the Japanese. And then, well, we went in there, and that first thing, you know, we started drinking. I don't remember anything for 3 days. No, I haven't really done that. So when we got back in the Clark Field, here we see guys crying. What the hell are these guys, what are these men crying for? Don't you, where you guys been? Roosevelt just passed it. The people actually cried. Oh. That felt real bad. They didn't know who was going to be president. Mm-hmm. They're afraid that we're winning the war, we're going to lose the war. It was a hard war. So anyway, and that's how I knew. And 3 days later, after he passed away, I found out over in Clark. Yeah. No, men actually cried this year.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
He didn't know. But I'll tell you one thing. He was a great. What I was trying to tell you is that on Pearl Harbor, on the second or third day, Roosevelt mandated all Japanese would go into a prison camp. They took women, children. If you look like Japanese or suspect, they put you in a camp. So out of everybody they put in the camp, they got 5% response. 5%? It was a smart move because everybody, in other words, they picked up all the spies and put them in the camp because you're Jap. See, I'm saying something to you, when I thought about it, I said, no, it can't happen. Probably if Roosevelt here, you know, all these terrorists we got, he'd solve a problem real fast. He probably put every Muslim into a camp. There wouldn't be no more terrorists left here, right? No, it would be a horrible thing, but I'm telling you right now, it's a thought. If things don't straighten out, it's a thought. Mm-hmm. And you know, like people say, it's not right, and our American citizens, like we have people going to our church. They're from India or they're Muslim. Mm-hmm. And they go to church, they're Catholics. You talk to some of those Muslims, you find out, what would you do if Hussein were to come in this country and meet this country? What would you do? Would you fight with the United States? No, we'd go Muslim. That is a truth. I'm going to tell you, my daddy, he was a German officer. He was a captain of the German army. During the First World War, you know, and when Hitler was governor in power, he was upset. He knew exactly, he could have wrote a book and be 100% right on it. Now, what Hitler was going to do, when he first got into power, you know, mm-hmm. And he says, you know, the German people brainwashed.
Mm.
Hitler brainwashed. He's done it for 12 years. As smart as they were stupid enough to believe him, you know. Just like this, we have certain things going on in this country. People are being brainwashed. People don't look at the truth, what is going on in this country. But anyway, he had the people brainwashed, my dad. He was so right about him. He knew when Hitler, when he made that pact over in the Sudetenland with Turkey, he said, that's not even the beginning. Wait till he goes into it. Then when he made a pact with Russia, he said, wait a minute. He said, if I know the Germans, it's going to be a short time ago. And he was so right about it. They attacked Russia. They made a treaty with Russia and they attacked them. See, it threw the Russians off guard in the middle. No, he was sorry because he was in the German army. He was a captain. You know what his position was in the army? His position was when the war broke out, his position was he was supposed to be in the United States, be as a fifth column. You know what a fifth column is?
Oh, yeah. It was that, like a communist or something, the fifth column. I can't remember. Tell me what that
fifth column. Germans have it. Fifth column is like this. If, you know, four columns are advancing. The fifth column is behind the line, you know, spreading propaganda saying how wonderful this guy is, you know, and they keep agitating the people and misleading the people. Mm-hmm. So that was his job. See, because he was born and raised over in Germany, but he was a little tiny guy when he came over here with his father. Mm-hmm. I guess like everybody else, he made a pile of money. When he was 16 or 17 years old, he went back. When he went back to Germany, they found out who he was. Hey, this man, you know, he can speak English.
Right.
They pushed him in. They got a good position in Germany.
Ah.
See, the Germans, you know, they...
And how long was he there? Was he staying in Germany until he died? Or?
No, he took off. was a long story, but he had, he was in the German army, he got, see, being a captain in the German army, you got a lot of power over there. So he got a German surgeon to tell, you know, say that he had something wrong with his lungs. He had to go to the Alps, 3 months, 6 months. Well, when he done that, he took off, went back to the United States. He was, you know, he was, went to school here.
That's right.
You know what I mean? He was,
had a passport.
Yeah, you know.
American passport, yeah.
And then my mother, he called for her, you know, she came over here. I mean, when they came over, my dad, he bought this place up here. He had it, he bought it in 1911, up here on the hill, Tollgate Road.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
And a couple of years ago, it was sold. My brother had it. There's a long story behind that. It shouldn't have happened. It should have stayed. There was a will made out, but nobody can find the will. The will was not recorded. Again, with this guy on lawyer in Doylestown, he was a lawyer, Barnes.
Oh, yes.
He's dead. He's gone.
Yes, he is.
All the records are really gone.
Right.
So we lost.
Sir Barnes.
Yeah. The place sold for $1,700,000. I remember when I was a boy, my parents said, we pinch pennies. I didn't go to school when I was 9 years old. You know why?
No.
Because my parents didn't have enough money to put a pair of shoes on my feet to go to school. So I went to school when I was 9. Their philosophy was like this. You have to believe in God. You have to be honest. If you want anything in this world, you got to go out and work for yourself. That's exactly. I went through two. You know, I went to the University of Indiana, and went to Dover Valley College, and I think I've done pretty good. I think I did.
You did very good. Yes.
In fact, the 9 companies we had, I become a CEO of the 9 companies. You know, I'm going to tell you something. Being a CEO then and being a CEO, two different things. Who ever heard of a CEO making $6 or $7 million? I mean, the board chairman of our company, he used to sweep the floors when he started up. No, we bought a press, a cheap press, printing press, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was the press, and the board chairman, he was a helper on the press. We used to get together, and he used to say, but that guy, I was his helper. You know, people didn't believe it, you know. But anyway, this is part of life, you know. I'm going to tell you, all my life, I worked. I've worked since I was 16 years old. First job I had, working in a hosiery mill.
Mm-hmm.
I worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And you know what my salary was when I started?
No.
$5.50 a week for 72 hours. Did you ever hear? No.
No.
And then I worked for a Dutchman. He was all right. Working for a Dutchman was real nice. If you worked, but you couldn't smile. He didn't like, you know, I thought have it. If you know what a Dutchman was, he was a real Dutchman.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, when Roosevelt came in, he instituted this NRA, 40 cents an hour. Oh, it was a godsend. I was a young guy, like 17. From 72 hours a week, they dropped me to 40 hours. And of course, I got an advance. Instead of $5.50, I was making $8 a week.
Mm-hmm.
12 hours a day and 6
yeah.
days a week. So anyway, I was making $8. When NRA came in, National Relations Act came in, I started making $16 a week. I went down to 40 hours, so they cut my hours almost like in half and doubled my pay. Oh, that Dutchman, he was going berserk. Guess what he done? Put another shift on. See, that was the idea.
Yeah, right.
It was 12 hours a day, two
yeah.
people working.
Right.
Working 8 hours, they put a third man to work. Roosevelt, he knew what he, I think he was very intelligent. He knew what he was.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him, you know. But anyway, that's the way we worked, you know. Then I'm telling you, I was a young guy when I went. I didn't have no time for nothing because we lived out in the country. And I'll never forget that. I'd be working 12 hours a day, and my mother would wake me up, you know, get in the morning, get in there, you know, at 7 o'clock, go to bed. 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, say, Johnny, get up there, we gotta do a little plow. Come on, it's, oh my God, he'd get me up, work for a couple hours. I went to work, I was half asleep, I'd come home half asleep. Life was hard.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, it was rough.
Mm-hmm.
What's the matter? Be quiet, that'll let you out, be quiet.
Yeah, I think she's getting loads of.
Completely wiped out over there. They wiped it out. They came through the Japanese. They had like a attack. 25 Japanese kids snuck right through. Incidentally, we had like 200,000 Japanese backed up against the hill there. And we had a whole, I don't know how many divisions we had, holding them back. You know, they were only a couple miles away from us. Like, from here to 413 then.
Mm.
I mean, they could sneak, but we were pretty well protected. But anyway, no, you see, one time there was a senator, I don't know what his name was, but he got in trouble. They said that he was over in, where was it, Vietnam, where mm-hmm. they wiped out a village of women and children.
Oh, yes, My Lai, the village of My Lai.
I don't know what
he was. A senator, but no, this was the, I don't know, Kali was his name. And they wiped out My Lai.
Well, I'll tell you what, I didn't like it because people criticized. I had the opportunity seeing something happen in front of my own eyes. We were on the invasion like 2 days. I mean, if you're, it's hard to describe, you know, there's trucks going, tanks going,
right.
I mean, it's, you noise. See bodies, dead bodies coming in, live bodies going in, scraping, right. I mean, it's hard. You can't describe anything like that. Right in front of our eyes, this guard on crossroads, you know, and they had to have a guard there because the tank doesn't stop for nothing.
No.
They had to stop the trucks, you know, they come down and rumble, you know. Incidentally, over the Pacific, the only thing we could use was light tanks. Because the ground was too moist, you know, they couldn't use anything. That could get down. But anyway, get down with you. Anyway, they had this, see, that's why I say, when he killed women and children, I agreed with him, because I would have done the same thing. Right in front of our eyes, there was these guys, funerals coming. See, over in the Philippines, everybody speaks English.
Mm.
Very good English. See, in schools, they were educated 4 hours the English and 4 hours their own lingo. And they would recite the I Pledge Allegiance to the American flag, you know, and this and that. But anyway, here come these funerals. And the guard said, he said, you know, this is about the sixth funeral comes through. The guy said, yeah, look at those bamboo poles. Brother. You know, they have bamboo poles.
Right.
They have mahogany caskets. You know, they got, you know, that's all they got.
That's right.
And so I said, well, you know, I mean, over there, you got a bayonet on you, you got a big knife on you, a pistol, you got everything. Over there, he dropped it, took his bed, opened it up, and guess what he found? Yeah. I mean, we're on the invasion 2 or 3 days.
Right.
I mean, the whole place is burning up.
What did he find in the
coffin? Guns and ammunition in the coffin. You know what happened to those polar bears? They got stabbed and instantly they were killed. The women, I'm going to say something, the women, little children, saying Our Father, Hail Mary, because most of them are Catholics.
Right.
So, and the women are crying, walking in behind me. I know. I'm telling you. The guys who wanted to kill the women and children instantly, they loaded them up, you know. So, I mean, and we got our boys over, you know what they were doing with those guys? Here were only like 2 or 3 days. What they were doing, they were feeding the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
They would take the casket into the cemetery, bury there during the night, during the daytime, dig it up at night, slip it through the Japanese. So the Japanese were bottled up and they couldn't move. What would you do? What would you have done with the women and children walking in behind this cave with guns and praying? You wouldn't have no, I know, this is war, you know, and I'm telling you, you have no heart over there, you have no heart, you have no feeling, you have no heart, especially when you saw something like that, you know. A lot of guys did, but I mean, this guy here that wiped out the village, you know, and he must have had a good reason. It wasn't because he wanted to, it was because it's like there's one enemy soldier in between,
mm-hmm.
like I heard over in Iraq, you know, these guys are, kids in school, and the guys are with a gun shooting, among the kids, you know, shooting, trying to shoot our helicopters down. So this is really, no, I felt bad about it. I had the incident happen to me right in front of my window, you know, unloading guns. You know. I mean, from that day on, you know, every woman and every child who looked at, hey, they didn't. No, I tell you one thing. In my life, I wouldn't trust an Aussie. Australia, I was in Australia. I wouldn't trust it.
Oh?
The reason for that is because they would have killed, they killed any American soldier for a cigarette.
Really?
In wartime, anything goes, I mean.
Yeah, right.
Anyway. You know, if there was two Aussie and one American soldier, they'd get you. But they would never attack one of them. They had, you see, Australians got like $10 a month. That was their salary. They had no money they didn't get. They were very, very poor as money was. Filipinos, they would do anything for a peso, they'd do anything. I wouldn't trust them because I'll tell you, the people I trusted after the war, you know what people I trusted? The Japanese. When the day they surrendered, Emperor told them we were their conquerors. They had to do exactly what we told them. See, I was in there, I flew in. The war was still going on when they got word. See, it was like 3-4 weeks before the war ended. We got the whisper, you know, come through, you know, from through Russia, it came through. The war was coming to an end. We dropped a bomb on the 6th. We dropped another one on the 9th. On the 12th, I was sitting in Japan. Six of us. We flew in. I don't know how it was. See, they knew we exchanged. It's a document. We exchanged like 65 Japanese dignitaries. Mm-hmm. Colonels, you know, their officers. They exchanged 65. They went into Clark Field down in Manila. And we went to Japan. We didn't know that that time. We had orders.
Mom, oh, they would say mom. Yep. All for the mom.
Yeah, everybody was, I see everybody in the Air Force. I seen guys who are 18 years old, captains, colonels, in the Air Force, 18 years old. Real young guys, you know, real young guys. I was a young guy, you know. By the time I was 24 years old, I've seen two-thirds of the world, seen things that most human beings will never even read about or dream of. I had an experience that most people don't even, you know, you can't begin to put it in words. You know, different things we talk about, different things. Yes, I was there. I used to have a girl living here with me. She was from Finland. She was a model. She was 6'3". Oh, she was a doll. I loved her to death. Oh, she was a sweetheart.
Uh-huh.
She was 20 years old, and I used to tell her about where I was, you know, over in Italy and Europe, you know, over in Japan. She said, John, I was there. She was a mom. She everything. Tichikawa, she said, I was there, John. She said, I was there. She was 20 years old. She was modeling since she was 8, and the thing she told me, in order to be a model, she said, some of the things you have to do, it's not very nice. But I'll tell you one thing, she walked in the house, and what she done?
Yeah.
First thing she said, John, these curtains got to go. Took all the curtains off. She said, she had an accent, very hard accent. She's such a good
person.
Oh. And she was over in Finland, nobody has curtains on the rooms. In the bedroom, this has to go, John. The bed, the mattress, in other words, the bed had to go. They take the mattress, no boxes, they take the mattress, lay it on the floor, and they sleep there. That's her standard over in Finland.
I'll be done. And how long was she with you here?
I don't know, about 2 years.
Mm.
Well, she was here quite a while. Her daddy lived here in Jagantown. She, I don't say she was an alcoholic, but she could sit down and drink a half a gallon of wine, no problem there. And I remember one day, see, I was driving, after my wife passed, I was in a horse and carriage business. Mm-hmm. And I used to drive in New Hope, Lambertville, Washington Crossing, Doylestown, Newtown, Princeton, New Jersey. I like Princeton, New Jersey, you know why?
Yeah.
I made $1,000 a day there. I'm good at it. 75% of customers in Princeton were foreigners.
Oh, uh-huh.
They're foreigners. Uh-huh. But Doylestown, I like Doylestown. They treated me like a king in Doylestown. I couldn't make any money there. Newtown was the same way. Newtown, I love Newtown. And I couldn't make enough money. I could barely make $200 a day there. Same way in Doylestown. Lambertville, I used to be there. What's her name? Donna. She used to work in Lambertville. Mm-hmm. She was made out pretty good over there. But Peddler's Village, I used to make out real good there.
Really? Good. Yeah.
I used to make in between.
Now, who owned the horses?
West End Farms had
I
worked for
Wendy McClure.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, it was hard. We had like 12 horses out in the road. We made like 10, 12,000 a weekend.
Really?
Guess what? On Monday morning, we could not have enough money to pay for the feed money.
Where did the money go?
Well, that's we found out later on. There were drugs and drinking.
Oh.
See, so well, I have elections, and people used to laugh at me. So they open, what the hell are you doing with 8 bags of feed in your truck? What are you doing with horse feed? I said, well, it's like this. The little girl, the one girl, she had a pickup truck. She carried hay, and I carried feed.
Mm-hmm.
Up here, Hill Hall Farms here, we kept the horses up there.
Mm-hmm.
See, Wendy McCook had her own farm there.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
She had 32 stalls.
Yeah.
She charged from $550 to $850 a day. She didn't have enough money to pay for the feed, so they used to come up and get the feed up there. You know, they would get the heck out of here. The people that sold us the feed, they wouldn't sell us no more feed because they wouldn't give her credit. Same way. So what we done, we broke the, spending my own money for the horse feed. Because I, you know, those horses, you know, oh, I love those horses. I had an accident. 3.5 years ago, I was working for him. I had another guy starting a business for him over in New Jersey, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Had an accident in Delphi, so. But anyway, McGregor, he seen me, I guess about 2 years ago over here at Edmonds Village, and he seen me, he really got, I cried. Because he heard my voice and he really got me.
Uh-huh.
You know why? See, I got chocolate chip cookies. My dogs, I buy chocolate chip cookies. Horses love their chocolate chip cookies. And he looked, he's digging in. Now I says, McGregor, I don't have any chocolate. And there was a mare, she was a Belgian mare, Petunia. She looked back at me, she was looking at me. No, honey, I don't, they wanted their chocolate chip cookies. Well, I treated those horses real nice. We used to have drivers over there who kicked the hell out of the horses. Me, I used to feed them every day when they hear my car coming down the driveway.
Right.
They would say, oh, McGregor, he would come around. He'd wait, oh, hey, come on, fellow, here comes the feedback. No. Oh, those horses love. I used to have Wendy, Oprah Winfrey's carriage horse. I drove her carriage horse for about 3 years.
Really?
His name was Ryan. He was a little squeaky little horse, you know. And oh, he loved me to death. I had him over New Hope on Halloween, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't like crowds. And, you know, people on Halloween, and they get together looking for that ghost over there. New Hope. I don't know if you ever been there.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about the ghost.
Well, anyway, he didn't like crowds like that, you know. So he would nudge me and push me around. I was okay. I said, we're going to go. And the minute I said we go, he'd wait till I get on top. And the minute I touched the driver, he'd go like that. I had one guy there, he used to be in Peddler's Village. He used to call him, what the heck was it? But anyway, anyway, this guy here, he'd look at me. See, he wanted his chocolate chip cookies. Sometimes people would talk to me. I'd be sitting up there. I wouldn't get off. I'd look back at him. And, you know, if I wasn't getting off, he'd start back, and he'd think it if he'd start back and he'd catch me up. No, he couldn't do it. I would have to give him a cookie. I'd get off the carriage, give him a cookie, he was satisfied. Then if I'd be staying there too long, you know, and he'd think he needs a cookie, he'd get, see, I was well dressed.
Yes, yes, yes.
He'd get a hold of my vest and shake me like this. I'm telling you, but it hurt me to know that a horse could remember me 2 years later.
Just by your voice, yep.
No, I took care of those animals just like I take care of these guys here, baby. Right, Becky? Yeah, Daddy takes good care of you.
Yes.
Right. Becky, come here. Come on, play something. Here, come in.
What is it?
Say, he's my dad.
Yeah.
She had 10 puppies here.
10 puppies? Yeah. Good grief.
Say, my daddy brought them into this world. He said, I got sick and went to the hospital. I guess I raised the puppies.
Oh.
I fed them all. I lost 25 pounds feeding them.
Because you're up 2 hours, and every 2 hours you got to feed them.
No, I fed them on the way I was feeding. See, I was born and raised out in the country in the farm, and I knew what to do. You got 10 puppies in there. They're only 3 days old when I start feeding them. But I fed them. Oh, they got to be little monsters in 3 weeks. They were big little monsters. And so I said, well, I got to get rid of them. You know, these guys start opening their eyes and they ate 10 puppies and stuff. No, wait a minute. This is not no good. So anyway, I put it in the paper. I sold it. I got $50 a piece for it. People said, good. You can't. Oh, yes, I can sell it. I can sell it. They said, well, you can't sell them 6 weeks. Well, you can't take them away from the mother for 6 weeks. But I was feeding these puppies myself.
Right.
So a person, one woman come in, she got 3 puppies at one time. Oh, they were nice looking. You know, they just opened their eyes, you know, and they were more or less, you know, they got a feeling of it. Oh, they were so nice.
And
so
they were what the breed? Was it, this was the mother. What was the father?
Puppy was the father.
Oh, the shepherd.
Yeah, the screams and all.
Yeah.
Oh, they love each other. She likes him. I don't know, but he can do anything to her. She's spayed now.
Uh-huh.
And he's not neutered. But anyway, he can do anything. The other guy's a wolf dog.
Yes.
25% hybrid.
Oh.
And she snaps at him, but all the puppy, they get along like 2 feet in a pot. Oh, she loves him. Right, Becky?
So you're leaving on Friday, packing up and taking off.
Got settlement on Friday. I'm going to get out of here. And
right.
Jeannie's husband Bob's going. We're all going to take off together. I think my son's going with me. We're going down there. I got another settlement down there on the 26th on Monday.
And okay.
We got to.
You know what your address is down there, John?
Yeah.
Good. I bet you do. I want to write it down because I want to send you a copy of this tape.
Well, let's see.
Let me see here.
Look at the cow.
Is it something I said?
Yeah. Every place I go, every move I make, she wants it. She wants it. Hey, miss. When I watch TV, that's what it's about.
Okay.
There's a place I got. Got alligators in the pond.
Oh, jeez, Louise. Alligators in the pond.
Get it tied.
Ah, there you are. The address is 4859. Okay, I got it right here. That's okay. I just got it right here. 554.
No, the taxes are very high there.
South Carolina, right?
Yep. You know how high the taxes are here?
No.
Of course, it's gonna be different with me. Regular taxes are $820 a year.
Yeah.
$820 a year, and, that's what, if you can homestead it, you're a veteran, you get a discount. If you're over 65, you get a discount. So my tax will probably wind up maybe being a couple hundred dollars if you want. See, they, I'm gonna say something. They really take care of their senior citizens. They take care of their veterans. They depend on them.
No, they don't.
Why? Can you tell me why?
No, I can't.
Huh?
Nope, not at all. Well, dear heart, I'm going to shut this machine off.